From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Tuesday has been proclaimed a national day of mourning across Iran, where thousands of homeless spent a second night in the open air following Sunday's major earthquake and aftershocks that left more than 400 dead and thousands injured. The 7.3 magnitude tremor jolted the western province of Kermanshah, bordering Iraq, the hardest hit of some 14 Iranian provinces affected. Meanwhile, in Iraq, Rahman Hani, director of the Darbandakan Dam, said despite its strong construction, the dam was clearly damaged at the top, where there are vertical and horizontal cracks. He also said part of the dam actually sank. The quake was centered near the town of Halabja in Iraq's northern Kurdistan region and was felt in Turkey and Israel. It made skyscrapers shake in Dubai. The quake heavily damaged villages and caused landslides that hindered rescue efforts. In Tehran, a blood transfusion official appealed for donations, especially for negative blood types, including O negative. The Iranian Red Crescent estimates 70,000 are in need of emergency shelter. The region sits astride major fault lines and is prone to tremors. The 2003 quakes in southeast of Tehran left tens of thousands dead. Vote counting is underway in Somaliland after the breakaway republic held its third presidential election. Three candidates are competing to replace President Ahmed Mohamed Mahamud, who opted not to seek re-election. Final results are expected for several days. The former British colony broke away from the rest of Somalia in 1991. The territory has run its own affairs since, but has never been recognized as an independent country. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump is wrapping up a 12-day, five-nation tour of Asia dominated by talks on North Korea and trade. The president said once he returns to Washington, he'll make a major statement on North Korean trade. His last stop was a Southeast Asia ASEAN summit in the Philippines.
When we get back from the White House sometime during Wednesday, very complete statement as to trade, as to North Korea, as to a lot of other things. We've made some very big steps with respect to trade, far bigger than anything you know. This has been a very fruitful trip for us and also, in all fairness, for a lot of other nations.
Meanwhile, an ASEAN communique is expected to announce the 10-nation Southeast Asia group will begin negotiations with China on a code of conduct for the South China Sea, where several nations have competing claims. A North Korean soldier shot several times while defecting on Monday has undergone several surgeries and remains in critical condition but is expected to survive. The soldier used a vehicle to approach the border with South Korea but was forced to abandon the vehicle and was shot at least seven times during his escape. The Army of Myanmar, also known as Burma, released a report Monday disavowing all allegations of rape and killings during a security crackdown that's forced hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims to flee to Bangladesh. The charge was leveled by a senior UN official. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres Monday met with Myanmar State Councilor Aung San Suu Kyi on the sidelines of the ASEAN summit. He urged her to allow the Rohingya back to Rakhine State. Publicly, the UN chief expressed alarm at the plight of those Muslims.
I cannot hide my deep concern with the dramatic movement of hundreds of thousands of refugees from Myanmar to Bangladesh. It is a worrying escalation in a protracted tragedy and a potential source of instability in the region and radicalization.
U.S. Secretary Rex Tillerson is to meet Aung San Suu Kyi in Myanmar Wednesday. The Turkish and Russian leaders met Monday at the Russian Black Sea resort of Sochi to discuss the next steps in bringing the Syrian civil war to an end.
Ben bu ifadeleri anlamakta doğrusu zorlanıyorum.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said countries that insist there is no military solution should withdraw their forces. But in Asia, both President Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump said they would continue the fight against Islamic State. The Russian and Turkish leaders said it's time to reach a long-term stabilization leading to a political settlement in Syria. Catalonia's ousted regional president, Carles Puigdemont, told a Belgian daily he would be open to a solution to the political dispute with Madrid that does not involve secession. Puigdemont was ousted and fled to Belgium after Spain imposed direct rule and arrested Catalan officials after independence was declared October 27. And a federal appeals court in California let President Trump's latest travel ban go partially into effect, involving six Muslim-majority countries.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's top military brass comments on political divisions in the ruling ZANU-PF.
The army is disgruntled. On the other hand, the whole population, the people, have got problems. They queue every day for $20. When this happens, you cannot blame the army if it decides to take over and stop the rot that is going on.
Douglas Mahia is the spokesperson for the Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association. A petition has been launched to free President Paul Kagame's critic, Diane Rigara, from jail. Sierra Leone's former Vice President Sam Sumana says he will contest the 2018 presidential race. And in Liberia, Senator George Weah says he will win the country's runoff election if and when it is rescheduled.
Weah will do a rerun. We'll go to a second round, or third round, or fourth round, and fifth round. Mr. Buaka will be beaten, the Unity Party will be retired, and a new government will come in place. Liberians are resolved, and we will win the elections.
George Weah is the presidential candidate of the Coalition for Democratic Change in Liberia. There's a new plan to resettle African refugees from Libya, and is Cameroon at war with itself as more violence is reported in the country's English-speaking regions? Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's top military brass has been commenting on the political fallout in the ruling ZANU-PF party, leading many to question its loyalty to President Robert Mugabe. Ndimi Yake Mwakalele of VOA Zimbabwe Service has more.
The statement Monday by Commander of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, General Constantine Chiwenga, that the army will step in if the instability in the ruling ZANU-PF party continues to result in purges of those who fought for the country's independence, has generated debate among citizens about the role of the army. Addressing a press conference in Harare with about 90 other senior military officials, General Chiwenga took aim at what he called counter-revolutionary infiltrators who are behind the, quote, current purging and cleansing of mostly members associated with our liberation history. Chiwenga's statements come exactly 1 week after the expulsion of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and a few others seen to be loyal to him, all mostly war veterans. United Kingdom-based political analyst Lloyd Msipa said Chiwenga's decision to weigh in on the national issue is a direct attack on the pre-liberation Generation 40, or G40 group, allegedly aligned to First Lady Grace Mugabe, which sparked Mnangagwa's dismissal, claiming he was disloyal to the president and was plotting to overthrow him.
The so-called counter-revolutionaries we're talking about, these are people who have not been in the war. They have literally taken over the party. And everybody who's associated with what the preamble says, the national constitution says, the respect of all the people who fought in the war has been done away with.
Msipa said the presence of other senior military officers at the press conference aimed to show President Mugabe that the army is united in calling for an end to the purge of its fellow war veterans and whatever action he planned to take against Chiwenga.
If Mugabe responds to this in a way that is not a political process, the army will step in. See, I do not think that General Chiwenga was actually bluffing when he made that statement, because the instability in ZANU-PF has affected everybody within and outside Zimbabwe.
Spokesperson of the Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association, Douglas Mahia, who was expelled from ZANU-PF in 2016 with other senior veterans after issuing a communique stating they no longer supported President Mugabe, said he welcomed Chiwenga's statement. Mahia said the army is simply trying to stop further suffering of not only the Zimbabwean people, but those in the military as well, who are not getting support from the state.
And the army is disgruntled. We heard the other day the chief of staff of the army saying the uniforms are torn, the state cannot afford to buy them uniforms, and they've got patches, and the food, the rations have been cut down. So the army is absolutely in a dire state. On the other hand, the whole population, the people, have got problems. They queue every day for $20, the whole day, at the banks. At times they're told, no, it's not there, come back tomorrow. When this happens, you cannot blame the army if it decides to take over and stop the rot that is going on.
reached for comment on Chiwenga's statement, many in ZANU-PF and the government, including Information Minister Simon Kayamoyo, declined to comment. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, this is Ndimyake Mwakalielie in Washington.
In Liberia, Senator George Weah, presidential candidate of the Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, says he will win the country's runoff election if and when it is rescheduled. Weah and incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai were set for a November 7th runoff, but the Supreme Court ordered a stay until the Elections Commission can investigate a challenge brought by four political parties alleging irregularities in the October 10th first-round vote. In the second and final part of an exclusive interview with VOA, Weah says Liberians voted for him in the first round because they believe he can develop the country. He says he's confident the Supreme Court will allow the process to proceed because Liberians are eager to choose their next leader.
Some political parties claim that they were cheated, and the challenge is in court, and we are following the process, and we're hoping that it will come to a point where, you know, the court will make a decision. And we as political party, we are told that we're going to the second round of these elections, and we are preparing. We continue to let our people know that we'll go to the second round, and we are waiting for the verdict. But I'm confident that the Supreme Court will do everything to allow the process to come to a point, because Liberians are resolved, they are waiting for to go to the second round, and Liberia want to choose the leader, and we are waiting. In the meantime, we are keeping our country safe, we're telling our people to be stable, to be peaceful, to continue to be hopeful.
So there's some rumors that some people are thinking about the possibility of interim government. What do you think?
But what I think is far from reality. I mean, there's no war in this country. I think we are past that state of interim government. We went through wars and we came to an interim government. We passed that stage. We came to the democratic process. Now we have a government in place. We are expecting a transition because the government in place will soon be leaving, but it will soon be going, and she'll be turning over to a new elected democratic leader that will continue the government. We are far from an interim government. Those days are over. I don't see why people will be even thinking in their head that would be interim government. There's no way.
So before I let you go, Ambassador Weah, what do you think are your chances? You have run, or your party has been in the elections in Liberia. This is, the third time. What do you think are your chances for you and for your party?
Mr. Bote, I came to the race. You know, I spoke to my people. My people are resolved. My well-wishers and the Liberian people are resolved. You know, they believe that I'm a good person. I have a big heart. And I can develop the country, and I can make the change. This is why they voted for me in the first round. And they are prepared, they are ready, they are resolved to vote for me again whenever they tell we are going to the second round. You know, people that have no history of going to the first round or second round, they are claiming that they won these elections. You know, they were cheated and what have you. But Mr. Bode, let me remind you, in 2005, I spoke to you. You know, I won the first round, and then we went to the second round. In 2011, I spoke on your station, the same. What I've done in this country, I've kept the peace for 12 years. Those who are claiming today, even the ruling United Party, Mr. Boakai that joined those who are that complained that were cheated, Mr. Boakai is a complete direct beneficiary of fraud in this country. So it's so disheartening to see that he is convinced that there was fraud and what have you. Well, it's a process we went through. If there's a fraud, the process is on, and then the court will make that judgment, and we'll continue. But what else? We'll do a rerun. We'll go to a second round, or third round, or fourth round, and fifth round. Mr. Boakai will be beating, the Unity Party will be retired, and a new government will come in place. Liberians are resolved, and we will win the elections. My chances are very high. I said it before I came to the race, and I'm saying it again. Mr. Boakai, hell counts. You cannot defeat me. And no one.
Senator George Weah, so nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
It's my pleasure.
George Weah is the presidential candidate of the Coalition for Democratic Change in Liberia. He spoke with me Monday from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 14th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Former Sierra Leone Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana says he will contest the country's 2018 presidential election. Sumana was sacked in 2016 by the ruling All People's Congress Party, and he took his case to the ECOWAS Community Court for redress for what he called his illegal dismissal. Sumana has since been living in exile. He went home briefly last year to register to vote. Sumana says he will be a flag bearer for the Coalition for Change, not the ruling APC. Sumana tells viewers David Vandy he and President Ernest Bai Koroma fell off because he disagreed with the president's plan then to run for a third term.
When you ask me what happened or where did it go wrong, that's a tough question in the sense that me and the Sierra Leonean populace do not really know what really happened until when we realized that President Koroma had a third-term ambition, and they had plotted for so long to get this in place, because knowing that I have been serving as the vice president of Sierra Leone under his leadership in 2007 till 2012, he had an option not to appoint me as his running mate again. But knowing my contribution and how viable I am for his re-election, he reappointed me. So at the end of the day, what happened was that, going back to your question, is that his ambition for a third term that I did not subscribe to propel his action.
He has this ambition of running for a third term, and you were against that.
I was against it because I've made that very known in several quarters that Sierra Leone has a constitution that we need to adhere to. Some of the factors, the principal factor that led to the civil war in Sierra Leone was because of bad governance, wherein a single individual, ex-military officer, was aggrieved that led to the senseless war.
Elections is coming, so yes. Are you in or are you out? Are you going to run?
I'm going to run under the Coalition for Change.
So what would happen if the current government prevents you from running?
That's my civic right. I know the international community is also aware about it. And we're going to continue with that and make sure that my party goes through the process of contesting the elections.
The party you're going to run under, has it been registered?
It's under the process very soon. In the next 2 weeks, that will be concluded. But what I have to say to you and the rest of the listeners worldwide is that there's a due process that we adhere to. And the national partners that are there, be it United Nations, the EU, the US, etc., or the UK, have all been looking into this because they spent so much money to bring peace into Sierra Leone after the 11 years of civil war. And if the Peace Building Commission today in Sierra Leone is continuing to look into these issues, and civil society organizations in Sierra Leone also, I'm sure me, as a Sierra Leonean, I have the right to register my party and contest the elections.
Don't you think time is running out for your party?
Time is not running out. You don't have to reintroduce Sam Sumana to the people, the voters, or the electorates. Sam Sumana is a household name now. And I've given something to Sierra Leoneans. I give them peace. I gave peace a chance in Sierra Leone. So the narrative is very clear. It's there. And whatever is happening now, I tell you, in politics, you go to the electorates. And this time around, the electorates are coming after a candidate that they need to salvage the situation out of the hands of a dictator.
Samuel Sam Sumana is the former sacked vice president of Sierra Leone. He spoke with viewers David Vandy in our Washington studio. An online petition has been launched by the African Great Lakes Action Network to demand the release from prison of 35-year-old Diane Rwigara, a staunch critic of President Paul Kagame, and her mother. Rwigara, who was disqualified from competing in the August election, is charged with forgery and inciting insurrection during her bid to run for president. Her family has described the charges as politically motivated. The petition says, Diane Rwigara stood up for your rights, now stand up for hers. Tabitha Gwiza is the aunt of Diane Rwigara. She says the mother's health has been deteriorating.
Well, Diane is still in prison, as you know, and she was supposed to have a hearing last week, but it didn't happen. Nothing happened because they told her about that hearing. It was a day before. Actually, it was a night before. So her lawyer didn't even know. So she went there without a lawyer, but the mother's lawyer was there. But the mother was sick. She couldn't go. She even still sick right now. So that hearing did not happen, but they postponed it to November 16th, which is, I believe, this coming Thursday.
What do you know about this petition calling for her release?
Yes, that petition, I'm hoping it's going to help to show the president of Rwanda, Kagame, that the Rwandans all over the world and even other people who are not Rwandans are concerned about what's going with Diana and her family. The whole world knows what's going on, and even Kagame knows that what he's doing is not right.
Of course, you know that the government said that the family, your family owed some money, back taxes, and that he has threatened to even auction off some of the properties by the end of this month. What do you say to that?
I know, but you know that is actually political motivated. They are trying to make them keep quiet, not saying anything, like criticizing the government. But I saw that the authorities accused the Rwigaras of the outstanding tax bill of approximately $6 million. If they are not going to pay that tax by the end of November, as they said, they shall begin to put their properties on the market. They have been taking everything. They took them a long time ago. So what they still have now is that house they mentioned they still live in. So talking about they are going to take it away from them, really, they want those kids to live on the streets? But we are praying to God that one day Kagame is going to think that what he's doing is not right for this family.
Did you say that the mother has been released? And if that's the case, how is her health?
No, she's still in prison. Both of them, Diana and the mother, both of them are still in prison. Her health is not good. She has been sick and still sick. That's what I was telling you, that she couldn't even go to that hearing was supposed to happen last week. So, yeah, she's in prison. She's still there.
Thank you. So nice to talk with you always. Keep us up to date whenever you know something new.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling, and I appreciate what you do, and this helped so much, and I appreciate it.
Tabitha Gwiza is the aunt of jailed Rwandan politician Diane Rwigara. She was speaking with me from Canada. Violence continues in Cameroon's English-speaking regions, where there have been protests in the past year. Four members of the security forces were killed last week, which the government blamed on the so-called separatists who are demanding an independent Anglophone region. The latest is the explosion of four makeshift bombs in the city of Bamenda, despite a curfew and heavy security presence there. But is Cameroon really at war with itself? Paul Hansen Nchanje is editor-in-chief of the English Desk for Equinox Television in Yaoundé.
It was around 10 p.m. Sunday when news of the explosion broke out. There were three explosions, according to reports gathered from the ground. The first explosion that took place at the Mobile Intervention Unit, that's the GMU. That should be about the third explosion in less than 2 months in that area. The second explosion took place in beside a brewery station, locally called Brasserie. The third explosion took place around a filling station at the Commercial Avenue, precisely at Total Commercial Avenue. And so those explosions took place as a result of the detonation of a gas cylinder, because we must note here that it is not a real bomb. It's just a locally fabricated a bomb that usually detonates with the use of a gas cylinder.
This followed the murder of some police or gendarmes. So what can we make of all this? Is Cameroon at war with itself?
That's the question everybody is asking. Who is killing who? Are the gendarmes killing the civilians, and are the civilians killing the gendarmes? But the government spokesman, Issa Chiruma Bakari, 2 days ago said the gendarmes were killed by terrorists, whom he labeled as secessionists, that is, those who want to restore the former state of Southern Cameroon when it was during the British rule. But then many persons are asking that with the huge security put in place in these two regions, how come people are able to penetrate the security system and kill gendarmes on patrol? That is a big question here now in Cameroon.
So you are right. Those two regions are under curfew. Is that correct?
Yes, not all the divisions. In the Northwest region, the SDO for Mezam, Mezam is the division that holds the capital, that is Bamenda. The SDO, as a senior divisional officer of that division, instituted a curfew that will end on the 23rd of November. That curfew is for everybody from 10 p.m. to dawn. In the Southwest region, the governor of the Southwest region instituted a curfew for commercial motorbike riders from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. And he instituted a 9-point law that must be followed by inhabitants of all the six divisions that make up the Southwest region of Cameroon.
So what can you tell us about the burning down of school buildings? Is that true? And who is doing that?
Yes, school buildings are being burned down, erased by fire. Who is doing that? That is another big question. Like I said a while ago, the population are saying that the gendarmes that have been placed to ensure that they are secure, they are doubting the capabilities of these gendarmes because they say that they can't understand how an individual will enter into a school campus, set offices ablaze, especially administrative offices, with heavy security around.
Paul Hansen Unchanje is the editor-in-chief of the English desk for Equinox Television. He was speaking with me from Yaoundé. This week, a small group of 25 vulnerable refugees are now temporarily waiting in Niger for possible resettlement as members of the first evacuation of refugees from Libya to Niger by the UN's refugee agency, UNHCR. The new system envisions establishing resettlement points along the route that African migrants usually take from their home countries, such as Gambia and Nigeria, to Libya, in order to then get a clandestine boat to Italy. UNHCR representative in Libya, Roberto McNone, tells Ricky Stryak they hope this new system will decrease migrant deaths in Libya and at sea.
It's important because it was a pilot project, something that we could expand significantly, particularly next year, but also in the 2 months which are still this year.
You said you're going to expand it.
Yes, we are going to expand it, and the quantity will depend, on the one hand, on the places for resettlement, which are offered by certain countries, like European countries and Canada mainly. And because from that place, from Niger, they are going to be resettled to these third countries. It's only a transit point, Niger. And on the other hand, it depends also if we are going to have the authorization to open a transit center in Tripoli where we could process these refugees.
And when we talk about resettlement, does that mean it doesn't necessarily mean Europe or North America? Does it sometimes mean sub-Saharan Africa or does it depend?
Normally, there are a number of countries which are traditional resettlement countries, and it's certain countries in Europe, mainly in Northern Europe. Then we have Canada and the U.S., as well as Australia and New Zealand.
That was Roberto McNone, UNHCR representative in Libya. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Tripoli. That is it for this Tuesday, November 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good Tuesday.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.